Hello and welcome to the ATL Charlie Hoops podcast, non-special edition. Bo and I are back to discuss the Red Hot Hawks, who actually lost tonight, so not cooled off a little bit, but still best team in the East. We're going to talk some West, some All-Star, some other teams in the East that are coming. Hopefully y'all have caught the Anti-All-Star Game podcast. If you haven't, check it out over on Podium Game. It's one of the more fun things we do each year. But we're going to go ahead and get into this. We're going to start with the highs, and we're going to start with the most fun basketball game I've ever been to live. I've been to every playoff game the last 4 years for the Hawks. I've been at most every home game that they've played over the last 4 years. And the Warriors game on Friday night was, and it didn't matter which team was winning that game, that was one of the most hyped games I've ever seen in the regular season. It lived up to the hype. It was beautiful basketball from both sides. Bo, you were there as well. What were your thoughts on that game?
One of the things I was so surprised with, it was great defense being played, but the offense was just so good it didn't matter. At one point it was just like, you know what, it doesn't matter.
It really didn't.
People were scoring whenever they wanted to. It was beautiful.
The ball movement from both sides, the player movement. I was high above in the hockey box, but actually it was
the Raj Prashad Memorial Hockey Box, that is.
There's still a sign up there. I hope they didn't take it down. I posted it up there. The thing was, you know, a lot of times the hockey box, you're like, oh, gonna be way up top. It was really cool to watch that game just because both teams are so good at off-ball movement. It was like watching, like, it's like when you watch football all 22 and you see things happen. It was really cool. And the one play that still sticks out to me is that late Damari Carroll cut that Neek pronounces like the third dagger of the night or whatever. But it really was a huge play. Klay Thompson got caught napping on the weak side. Damari made a beautiful cut across the lane, which he does all the time. I think Millsap was triggering it at the top on the other wing and hit him. And it put the Hawks up 8, I believe, with just over a minute and a half to play or something like that. And it was one of those plays that, sitting high above, I saw it. Like, the moment he took one step, I was like, buckets. You know, and it's... And that play is just a microcosm of everything both of those teams do so well, is they both move incredibly well off of the ball. And for the Hawks to come out and to shoot the way they did and to have that kind of night, that was the type of game that solidifies this team. Like, I know it's one game. They're going to tell you it's one game. But it's the type of game the Hawks always lost in the past. The hyped-up game. Never been hyped like that. I was at shoot-around. It was like the finals. There are way more media.
There were 40 people in the hockey box, I believe. Something really
It was packed. Like packed in the hockey box. I was at shoot-around. There are Stein, Schwartz, Stephen A. are all in the building. And ESPN had another game going on. They were broadcasting another game. They had more guys in Atlanta for this. I can't believe they didn't flex it. Like, I was starting to... Chris Herring flew in for the game. He's doing something on Steve Kerr.
I believe Kevin Ding and Nathan Skolnick from Bleacher Report were also there.
Bleacher Report had two. Michael Wallace came up for ESPN.com. I mean, it was the game of the year, and it lived up to the hype. I hope you got a chance to watch it. I know it wasn't on national TV, which is an abomination. I don't care that Toronto and the Clippers was, on paper, a pretty good game. Like, that's a pretty good game, but those are 4 seeds. Probably the Clippers now are maybe out of the playoffs with the Blake Griffin injury. We'll get to that momentarily. But the fact that you don't flex to a game that would have blown out the ratings. Everybody wanted to watch that game. People in Atlanta are talking about that game.
I know NBA players that didn't have a game were talking about how they were watching that game.
They were watching that game. Everybody was watching that game. I cannot believe ESPN did. And we knew this game was coming. I had it circled on my calendar for 3 weeks. People were talking about it 2 weeks ahead of time. Like, non-super fans were talking about it. It was sold out for 2.5 weeks. You have to put that game on national television. They didn't. I hope you got a chance to watch it. If you have League Pass or are in the Atlanta market or Golden State market, it was some of the most beautiful basketball I've ever seen. I honestly, you know, I love the Hawks. I did not care who won that game. Round about mid-fourth quarter, early fourth quarter, when that game was 3 or 4 points, I was like, whatever way this goes, it's going to be fantastic. I was courtside for the Golden State game last year where Iguodala hit that late three. I was courtside. That was a great game. Loved every minute of it. Amazing. Sign me up for 7 games in June. Sign me up. I'll fly to Golden State for each one. Don't care. Blow the bank account traveling for that series. But really, and one of the guys I want to talk to, and it's the kind of thing that gets lost in a game like that was so high scoring. Andrew Bogut's defense is just freakish.
It was ridiculous. I think when at one point in the fourth quarter he wasn't in the game, I was wondering why he wasn't in the game.
Benched him.
Yeah.
So they pulled
the Hawks found him out a little bit in the second half. They were starting.
They were hot
from outside.
Yeah, they were cooking. They just kind of what they started doing was they really just did a good job of flexing Horford out and playing him more as a high elbow. You know, if they got him the ball, it was out there. And they forced Bogut to step away from the basket. And I think towards the end, Steve Kerr wanted shooting once they were down 8. But I know at the end of the third, they pulled him because they wanted to switch everything because the Hawks were drawing something up. And
yeah.
I remember they pulled him at first. I was like, what are they doing? And then they put Draymond or Harrison Barnes in the game, and they just wanted, and they did a really good job on that possession. They switched everything. And it's really an interesting thing. You know, we talk a lot, and we're going to talk a lot about the Warriors because it was the first time I've gotten to see them in person since last year. And it confirmed a lot. Even in a loss, it confirmed everything that I thought about that team. They're so good. You know, the Hawks shot out of their mind, 15 to 26 from 3. But they were good looks. You know, Kyle hit a couple stupid ones.
That one off the Dennis steal from about 5 feet behind the line.
That was as big a pop. That was the biggest pop in the arena since that Jeff Teague running 3 in game 4 of the playoffs last year. The one where he hit it, that where he actually stepped out of bounds.
Right.
The biggest pop in the arena since then. Phenomenal
second
crowd.
Second quarter of a regular season game.
Kyle, the Hawks were down 5. Dennis gets a lay-in. Somebody falls over. David Lee throws it in. Horford tipped it out. Dennis picks it up. Kyle is nowhere near the three-point line. Just catches and fires in about a quarter of a second from when he gets his hand on the ball. And everybody in the arena knew it was money. Everyone stood up. Media is standing up because he couldn't help it. I was talking with Herring. Herring's like, I think I stood up on that just naturally. Like, these are people that watch basketball all the time, and it's just stupid stuff like that. Curry got hot a little bit in that third quarter. Bud pulled Jeff, actually, because his defense, he wasn't getting over screens, put Dennis in. Mm-hmm. It was really fun because it was two of the best coaches in the league, young coaches, Steve Kerr, Mike Budenholzer, making great tactical decisions. No one got out-coached in that game. It was just two great coaching performances, two great basketball performances. Hawks came out on top. If that's in Golden State could win that. Sign me up for a final series with that. I feel like I say that all the time about Western Conference foes. I was watching the Grizzlies game tonight. Sign me up for that, too. Don't care. As long as it's not like any of the top four teams in the West would be a great series with the Hawks. Or the Cavs. The finals are going to be phenomenal this year.
You might have some new teams in there. That's going to be fun for...
It's going to be a lot of fun. The nightmare for the league is Atlanta-Memphis because no one's tuning into that. It would be great basketball, but it would be a slugfest. The league is praying that it's not that. I'd love to see it.
I think they, at this point, if Atlanta's in, they're going to probably want
Golden State. Golden State or the Thunder.
Yeah.
If the Thunder can make any kind of run, but they might not make the playoffs. Nightmares are Memphis and San Antonio against the Hawks. San Antonio, Cleveland, that's a win for the league because people are going to see if LeBron can beat the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to that game, the Hawks bench blew up.
It was great. Yeah. Mike Scott hit 5 threes. I think it was
5 shots. I think it was 3 threes and 5 shots because he had that huge dunk.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 3 threes. Baze had 3 threes.
Oh, yeah. It was 3 threes. He and Baze were both 3 for 3. I'm trying to think. It was either end of the third quarter, start of the fourth. I think it was end of the third. He hit back-to-back threes. That was a really key moment to keep in because the Hawks were a little bit, getting stagnant almost, and then Mike just comes in and hits 2 threes and in the matter of, like, 20 seconds.
What's he shooting from 3 this year?
Because
I feel like it's
high. Someone posted this on Twitter earlier. He's made, like, 9 of 7 of his last... Or 9 of 7, wow. 7 of 9 of his last... threes in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
He's been pretty pivotal lately.
He's shooting 37.9% from 3 this year. on 2.5 attempts per game. Like, these aren't the occasional three. This dude gets in. He's only playing 15 minutes a game. One thing we always say, Mike's got to shoot. But he's making them. But he's getting...
shuck if you let him.
He'll put it up. But, I mean, he's shooting lights out.
He was also 3-for-4 today against Memphis. So that percentage is going up.
So, Mike Scott's made a huge leap. And this was after he was a important player last year. Dennis's improvement is just every night. You just see Dennis, and you're like, against the Warriors, he comes in, and there was a stretch where I think he had 7 points and a lob to Horford in the course of maybe 3 minutes of game time, and it was huge for the Hawks.
I think it was 5 points. He made the three, and then he made the mid-range jumper.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think a lob to Horford was before that.
It was nuts.
Yeah.
It was – he's playing so well that it gives them a luxury of when T kind of – and I think that might be the difference this year. A lot of times you had to play Teague through those slumps, and sometimes he doesn't get himself out of them. Last year, because you were going to Shelvin if you weren't, and that wasn't a huge upgrade. This year, Bud will roll with Dennis for a long stretch, and he can score this year. He couldn't score last year. Dennis could not. He couldn't shoot. He could occasionally hit a set shot, but not even that. This year, he's
taking... He gets to the bucket, but he couldn't do anything once he got there.
He's finishing at the rim, and then Baze has been amazing the last month.
Mm-hmm.
He's, as one Hawks personnel guy told us before the year, Baze was their little $2 million gamble. And he's paying off big time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this for about the last month. Even if he's not touching the floor... If he didn't play at all this year, I think Baze is worth 4 wins to this team just from how much fun they have. And that's a lot on Baze. This was a lot of the same group. You didn't add much to this team.
Mm-hmm.
But they have more fun this year, and I put a lot on Baze because he's got that bench going. The bench celebrations this year for the Hawks, and you can poo-poo that all you want, but if you don't think chemistry matters, you just aren't watching basketball. You're just not. Like, if you don't think chemistry is huge, and this team loves... playing together, hanging out together. When they're on the bench, they're into the game. Hawks teams of the past did not watch the game from the bench. They weren't caring. You know, even last year, the team, Dennis was kind of like, but they didn't have kind of the rock. Baze is running around.
Everybody watches the bench now whenever something happens. People.
Mescal is standing behind Korver doing the moose goggles. Baze literally will run down the baseline to the goal stanchion and back after a made three. Like, Dennis is up there popping towels. Mike Scott's doing stuff. Thabo's having fun.
Perro gets up even.
Those creaky knees. He gets up. It's a lot of fun. Like, even when the starters are on the bench, they're like, Millsap's up. The chemistry of this team is amazing. And you see it with the Warriors, too. The Warriors love playing with each other. And I think it's something that a lot of the best teams... I think it's one of those things that, until you see it, until you notice it, it's not something you think about, but looking back at other Hawks teams, there's something to that, to having resiliency, is when you're kind of constantly up, you have that feeling like, okay, like the whole bench never gets down, the whole group never comes down, this team gets down 6 to the Warriors, and they're not like, well, screw it.
Yeah.
You know, Steph and Clay got hot, because Steph and Clay got hot in the third quarter, and they were down. Like, the Hawks were up 16, and then they got down. And you could have been like, ball game. Not this year. It's crazy. And then they played the Grizzlies tonight in Memphis. Good showing. Grizzlies are a hell of a team. They are just brutal.
They're going to force you to play their style. And that's just absolutely brutal.
Especially at home. That's the thing, is at home. When they were here on Tinder night, I always kind of forget Tinder night was the Grizz. When they're here, the Hawks kind of imposed their will in the fourth quarter, made some threes, ran them.
Mm-hmm.
This tonight, or I guess this would be yesterday for whenever this gets posted, not the case. Tony Allen was
all over the
place. Hounding people, grabbing rebounds. He grabbed like 3 rebounds in the fourth quarter. That I'm like, you have no business. You're a shooting guard. That's T.A.
That one rebound he got over, I think, Mike Scott and Kyle Korver.
He ripped it out of Kyle's hands.
It was pretty much an uncontested rebound. He just flies in.
He flies in, grabs it out of Kyle's hands clean. Mike Scott falls to the ground. Tony rips it. Kyle trips over him. drops a bounce pass to Zeebo. Zeebo finishes, and that was pretty much the dagger. I think that put them up 6. That was it. That was a game with 51 seconds left. But that's what Memphis does. So, I mean, really, I'd love to see Memphis. I'd love to see Golden State Hawks in a series. It would be so much fun. But, it shows you a little bit about the Hawks. You know, you keep wondering about some of these tests, and you keep waiting for some of these tests. And Golden State in April, I think, is going to be another one of those tests where you go on the road and how you play. And that's going to be another playoff atmosphere. But they've passed every test at this point. You know, and, you know, I think a lot of Hawks fans, for those listening, are frustrated with the questions that are still about a team that's 42-10. And it's understandable to be a little frustrated about that. But at the same time, until they do it, you're going to have questions.
Even Korver said that the other day in his postgame. It's like, you know, we still have a lot to prove. We need to do this in the playoffs. Until we do it in the playoffs, no one really cares.
Right. And so they can only do what they can now. They're doing everything that they need to do. We'll find out in the second round of the playoffs. They might drop one game in the first round. Maybe a little road slip up, somebody gets hot. Yeah. Depending on the matchup, Detroit could be a funny matchup. They, you know, Drummond gets 30 boards in a game. I think
Detroit and Monroe both get 30 boards in a game.
Right. You know, there's some teams, Charlotte probably not. But there's some teams that, you know, could be funny matchups for the Hawks and maybe make it a 4-1 series. But, you know, you're going to learn a lot in the second round when they play Washington, Toronto, or Chicago. But even Chicago doesn't scare me this year, and I'll tell you why. Chicago in the second round is going to be dead tired. Their starters are
going
to be
dead tired, or they're just going to be hurt. They're not going to be healthy. Yeah.
People have been hammering Thibs for years about minutes, but at the same time, everything's been working out. And this was something Kyle said at shoot-around that was interesting. You know, Thibs' defense was the gold standard for years.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody copied it. The Hawks' offense is the answer to that defense, that strong side load-up that's meant for ISO and single-side pick-and-rolls. The Hawks move it so much that weak side just gets brutalized all day. Like, when the Hawks play Chicago, they just beat up that weak side defense. Because there's only one guy over there. And so you move the ball, and you pass quickly, and so that's the thing, and that's where, and Kyle said it in shoot-around, it was, you know, if you ever need a good basketball coach, you go to Korver. The dude's so smart. He's going to be a coach in this league for years. Like, he could be that Steve Kerr guy that comes in quickly. He knows the game so well. All he does is watch film. But Kyle said, he was like, look, the entire league copied Thibs' defense. Like, 18 teams try to run it. They can't all run it, but they try. This offense is the answer. He's like, now people are taking this offense. Spurs, Hawks, Golden State, you see some more teams trying to run this kind of stuff. You're going to see more going.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next step is to move towards a different defensive scheme, the type Golden State runs, where if you have that anchor like Bogut in the middle, or even if you have the talent, Ethan Sherwood-Strauss wrote an amazing piece on their defense on ESPN. If you haven't read it by now, go find it. One of the best basketball pieces you'll read all year. He wrote how they built the defense and what they try to do. And the thing that they do is they have a lot of guys. It's kind of like what the old Hawks were, where everybody's between 6'6 and 6'8, except they're talented all the way through.
Yeah.
You know? So everybody can guard everybody. So now they switch a lot of stuff. And we saw it against the Hawks. The Hawks made a lot of shots, but they kind of exploited those matchups. But against the team that's not quite as talented as the Hawks, as far as shooting, because everybody on the floor can shoot, it works like gangbusters. I mean, Golden State's one of the best defenses in the league by a lot. I think they are the best defense in the league by a good margin. So I think that's where you're going to see the league going, and these two teams are kind of on the cusp of it. You know, San Antonio kind of has been doing it for a long time, but these teams do it at a pace San Antonio doesn't. And it's just a lot of fun to watch. And then there's the Grizz, who are like the anti-Hawks and the anti-Warriors, and they just do it their way because they have the personnel to do it. And Mike Conley is an all-star. He's not because the West has 17 all-stars in the West.
Right.
He's an all-star player. He is tremendous. He runs that offense. I've gone on, if you want to listen to me rant about Mike Conley's amazing ability to throw entry passes, go back like three episodes in it. ATL Shuddy Hoops, there's a 10-minute discussion of that. He's so good at little things that are hard to see, his defense, running the offense. I honestly think the best two teams in the West are Memphis and Golden State. And I would die to see that Western Conference Finals.
And the standings agree with you. The two best teams in the West are Golden State and Memphis.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think both of those teams are built for the playoffs. They're built to do it long term. Because they play it the right way. They don't. The jump shooting.
They play team, here.
Yes.
They're always straight across.
For those. Consistent. For those that can't see, because you're on a podcast, yeah. Bo is putting his hand by his head and a consistent line as opposed to the middle. They play at a high level. They play at a high level consistently, and they have high-level players that can do it 1 through 10. And I think that's the difference in a lot of teams is the Hawks, the Grizzlies, the Warriors, they go 1 through 10 deep. And all of them can play, and all of them can sustain a run. I think that's the other thing the Hawks show is people want to see if the Hawks bench can match up with the Warriors bench. Yes, they can.
Yeah.
Some nights they don't shoot great, but the defense is still there mm-hmm. for the most part, and offensively they still run it because a guy like Dennis can run the offense.
And then hopefully by the playoffs we'll have Tabo back to be another defensive anchor. He's been one of the best defensive players on the team this season.
He has been.
Might have been.
I was a little concerned.
Did so well without him.
Yeah, because when you had Damari out, Clay got loose a few times. Steph missed some shots early. That were some Steph shots, mm-hmm. but he also banked one in, so... We even that out. But yeah, if you haven't got a chance to watch that Golden State Hawks game and you can find some time, even though it's already happened, it's well worth your watch.
It's good basketball.
It's just great basketball.
I have a question for you. Me and Brad Rowland of Peachtree Hoops were talking about this mm-hmm. a couple weeks back. What do you think, like, at this point, the Hawks need to win, like, in terms of games? I think we were talking about, like, what level of games would you be disappointed with, and at what point do you think, like, how many wins do you think they can get this year?
Win
they're
total.
They're already at 42 and 10.
42, they crossed their preseason over-under number. Cash those tickets, boys, if you took that, which you should have, because 41.5 was
ridiculously
way too low in the Eastern Conference. Even if you thought the Hawks were going to be a 4 seed, 42 wins was happening.
Yeah.
I think you look at it, you're at 42 now. There's what, 30-ish to go? 30 exactly. Yeah, 30 exactly.
If they go 500 the rest of the way, they win 59.
I think 60. It's crazy to think that, but that would be 18 and 12 the rest of the way.
And for perspective, they're going 18 and 12. 60 would be franchise record by 3 games, I think.
I think
the total is 57.
Yeah, I think you. I think 60 is essentially where you have to be if you're the Hawks, which is kind of crazy to say, but 60 is probably going to ensure you definitely is the one seed in the East and quite possibly gets you the top seed overall. The Warriors might win 62, 63.
And Memphis isn't far back.
So, I mean, I think 60 is the benchmark at this point. If you're over 60, that means you finish the season strong. Because the thing is, you don't want to go into the season playing 500 ball.
Right.
And you look at how the teams played, it's hard to see them going 500. It'll be interesting to see, you know, tomorrow night, or I guess if you're listening to this on Monday, tonight against the Timberwolves. That's a schedule rough one. Ricky's back. They're playing pretty good basketball in Minnesota, better than their record indicates. Minnesota played them tough without Ricky at home. That was a little sluggish Sunday afternoon basketball, though. I think everybody had a little fun on Saturday. It's easy to do that in Atlanta. And so it's going to be interesting to see. Hawks are a little banged up. Teague took a knock to the ankle. They got beat up by Memphis. I think a win in Minnesota is bigger than I think a lot of people think. You know, people will look at that and say, oh, it's Minnesota. I think a win in Minnesota is big for this team just to kind of be back. If they can win against Minnesota, win against Boston, get healthy, I think they'll hold Thabo out for the next two, try to get him back post All-Star break, have a full 8 days, be back.
Thabo's not longer than that, isn't he?
That one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, he's out. Yeah, he's out for like a week after. I guess you're right. Yeah. I was thinking Sheldon's Tama.
Ah, okay. So that will be...
That will be out for a couple weeks after. But he'll be back. I think they'll be conservative with him and try to get him back for the last couple weeks. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that 60 wins is kind of the benchmark that I think if you're under 60, I think you're disappointed as a Hawks fan and as a Hawks player, coach, whatever. I think you target 60 wins. And where were you at?
I think a couple of weeks ago I said potentially. I think I said 62, and Brad was a little bit like that seems really high because you know they were I think halfway through their win streak at this point,
and they still had this 4-game stretch that they went 2-2, which I was happy with. Yeah, I figured New Orleans was. I think we both pegged that as a loss.
Yeah,
I think you had it in the ESPN 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. I don't get to write places like that, but I had it. Just kind
of made sense. They played well against the Hawks with Anthony Davis having a bad game. Going to New Orleans, Davis was healthy. It just seemed like he could go crazy. Mm-hmm. He sort of did. I think he had 29 points.
Yeah. Which is kind of... The fact that 29 and, like, 10 and 8 is, like, kind of crazy for AD, but kind of expected. I think somebody said it. They were talking about... I was watching Game Time, and I think Rick Fox was saying something about how somebody had kept him in check, and then they pulled up his numbers. He had, like, 29, 11, and 6 blocks. And he was like, well, that's kind of in check for Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
So that's a good segue. Let's talk a little bit about the Pelicans. The same night as the Hawks played the Warriors in a bananas fun game, OKC and New Orleans played one of the most wild, like, took it to another level. Russ almost had a crazy triple double. We had 48, 11, and 9.
Mm-hmm.
KD was mediocre.
And KD was 9 for 26 from the field.
Bad. Hit a big three late because that's what KD did.
I think he hit 2 big threes in the fourth quarter.
Took a lob from Russ. Russ gets fouled on a three. Like, Anthony Davis made 2 clutch free throws, because that's what he does. Russ gets fouled on a three on a terrible contest.
I think Tyreek missed 2 free throws. Was it right before that play or the possession before?
I don't know. I was in the media room following on Twitter. But
Tyreek missed 2 free throws before that, I think, and then...
AD hit 2 big ones.
Maybe the AD's 2 free throws.
With 2.8 left,
yeah.
Russ gets fouled with 1.2 on the clock. Sinks all three, and Russ isn't the greatest free throw shooter. He's like an 80-something percent type guy.
He's not like Kyle. Yeah, if he was like, or even Teague, I feel like, with I don't know, maybe it's just Westbrook's sort of erratic personality.
But like, you're like, well, he can miss one.
Yeah.
All three were pure.
Yeah.
Sideline inbounds. Anthony Davis. Double pump three. His only three of the year. He's 1 for 9. Nothing but the bottom of the net. That kid's stupid.
Double
good.
Pump from 30.
He's 21 years old. I feel like I have to say this every time. He's the third best player in the NBA. Maybe the second. Like, what? Like, I
think he still might be, like, all-time, like, PER lead for the season right now.
Russ is at 28.
Like, he's at, like, 31.8. Anthony Davis.
Which is dumb.
His record is 31.8 by Will and LeBron. I think Will had a bit of an
injury. Yeah.
He's at 31.7, huh?
He went down a little scrub. Bit. Scrub. But, I mean, every
his career PR is already 26.5. This is the third
season. And I hope he's 21. I hope that shoulder injury isn't bad. That was a scary fall he took. Did you see the fall?
Yes.
Oh my God. He went hard on that shoulder. And that was the shoulder he already had taped up.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully he comes back from that. And is good to go, because New Orleans in the playoffs. If you're one of the West, if you're the Warriors or Memphis, you don't want to see the Pelicans. I mean, you want to see Monty Williams on the sideline because he's like bottom five coach in the league, and you want to see Tyreek and you want to see Eric Gordon, but you do not want to see Anthony Davis because he's gonna get you a game or two, just being him.
Yeah, they're 1.5 out behind Phoenix right now. New Orleans is.
Yeah,
they're a game ahead of Oklahoma City.
That West bottom... Here's the thing. I think Clippers fall out.
With Blake, that injury, yes.
Because he's done for 4 weeks. That's a staph infection. You don't fuck around with a staph infection.
4 or 6, yeah.
It's 4 is the earliest. It could be as many as 8. I think somebody, I think Stein, said something about they're hoping for two. You don't get two with surgery for a staph infection. Staph infections are no joke.
Let's call up CM Punk, see how long it took him to recover from his staph infection.
Let's call Teague. Talk some wrestling. But yeah, staph infections.
It's not even like he just has it either. It's on his elbow.
Yeah.
It's sort of important to basketball if you're unfamiliar with the sport.
His shooting elbow.
Yeah.
So you look at hit, you know, them without Blake, Big Baby got hurt. I can't believe that Big Baby is a piece that's big enough that Big Baby getting injured tonight with upper back spasms. Mm-hmm. And ask anybody that's had back spasms, those things don't go away. He got bodied by Nick Collison. He was turned around. You're hearing the ambient noises from my apartment complex right now.
We're doing this in front of a live crowd.
Live audience. They're really into it. Taking the trash out with a dog and yelling at it. So, yeah, I mean, you take Blake out of the equation, you're playing a lot of Spencer Hawes. Like, they were already playing a lot of Spencer Hawes.
They have no bench.
They don't. And this is my biggest
thing. They have Jamal, and that's it.
Their bench unit. I was talking with Tim Bontemps from the Post about it. That might be the biggest drop off of starting talent to bench atrocity in the league. You go from Chris Paul to Austin Rivers. Let's go position by position. Chris Paul to Austin Rivers. JJ Redick's been out, so whoever the other two guard is, but you go to Jamal Crawford. Yeah. But you know, he's out right now. I think he shouldn't be out long.
That late.
But you go to Jamal Crawford as your two, who's fine.
Yeah.
You know, he's a sixth man of the year candidate because he puts numbers up. He's not a true. Like, if you're going objectively by basketball player both ways, he's not. But sixth man of the year always are scorers. You look at it. It's Lou Williams, it's J.R. Smith, it's Jamal Crawford. Those are guys because, you know.
You can live with.
Yeah, okay. But he's fine. You go to the three, and you're playing a lot of Hedo Turkoglu. I think is their second. He's their second three off the bench, and that's coming from. And then who's their three starting?
Barnes?
Yeah. Matt, who isn't great.
Yeah.
But at least he plays a little bit of defense and can do some things. So you go to Hedo, who's not good. If this was 2009...
It'd be fantastic. Hedo would be starting.
He'd be great. But he's off the roids now, and... and then you go to...
You got Jordan Farmer as your other...
No, he's out now.
He's out?
He's out of the league. He got cut. They could sign Austin Rivers.
Oh, my God.
You got cut so they could sign Austin Rivers. Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel?
Good Lord. Why?
Yeah, that ain't good. That's the thing. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
I think I'd rather have Farmer on the Rivers. But, of course, there's a little...
We don't like Austin Rivers on the HL Shoddy Hoops podcast for good reason.
Yeah.
But their coach likes him because he's his son. And then you go Spencer Hawes, Big Baby Davis, and Ekpe Udoh is your bench depth. And the thing is, Blake and DeAndre can't play every minute of the fourth quarter because you have to take DeAndre out from minute four to minute two because he's just going to get hacked.
Yeah.
It's... What do you do? The Clippers fall out, almost assuredly. There's no way they play 500 basketball from here out. I refuse to believe. They got just... The train ran on today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any way that the Clippers, if Blake's out for the 4 to 6 weeks, no chance that they win.
It's helpful a little bit that they get the All-Star break to absorb a week there, but if he's out six...
It's game over.
It's
game over for the Clippers, especially because the Suns are playing good basketball. Obviously, the Pelicans, if AD's out, then they're out.
Yeah.
But you still have the Thunder down there. You still have the Suns. Mm-hmm. And, you know... That's a battle, you know. So the Thunder and the Suns and the Pelicans, two of those teams are getting in. That's your 8, 9, 10 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Clippers are out. Who's your 7 right now in the West?
San Antonio is the 7.
They're in.
Yeah.
They're cooking. They're playing.
Think about it. San Antonio is 4th in the Southwest. I think it's the Southwest.
Southwest is good. Southwest is good.
And then New Orleans is 5th.
Yeah, Southwest is good.
Yeah. They're all above 500.
Yes. They are. So, I just, the Clippers are toast, I think. I just don't see any way. And I know a lot of their fans are just out on them. They're tired of this. Doc is, Doc's one of the worst GMs in the league. I feel confident saying that because this is his bench unit he put mm-hmm. together. He punted on a lot of guys. And this wasn't a great bench unit, but he brought in some guys that just haven't worked. You know, you punt on Jared Dudley. Dudley's not a great player, but he's a serviceable. Yeah. But he is a serviceable three in this league. He's better than Hedo Turkoglu.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem saying that. He's not good.
And this year he's been better than Matt Barnes.
Yeah. The job Doc Rivers has done as coach, you can debate. The job he's done as GM, you can't. He's been awful. And it's just because I don't think Doc understands the NBA today. He's still stuck in 2008, 2010. He wants to bring in these guys that were good players then, and it's like, Doc, this is 5 years down the road. These guys are old and decrepit and can't play.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer Hall should not be a heavy rotation minutes guy. Glenn Davis should not see a basketball court. I know he was good for you in 2008 as a rotation guy. It's 7 years later. You cannot do that. It's bad. So the Clippers are out. The West is the Thunderdome. It's terrifying. Every night is a huge game in the West. Every game 1 through 10, if those two teams play each other, is huge. And the thing is teams like, and now Minnesota's kind of spunky. Rubio's back. That offense is cooking a little bit. They've got fun players. Wiggins is figuring it out. Wiggins is a player.
Mm-hmm.
Wiggins is a player in this league. You know, there was questions about him early, which I guess were warranted because he wasn't playing well. But he was a freaking rookie. Of course he's going to play rough. DeMarcus Cousins just hit a buzzer beater to beat the freaking Suns. Because why not? This season's not bananas enough. The Suns are, you know, who knows anymore in that bottom of the West. But I think the Suns are better than the Clippers. For sure. Without Blake.
Oh, yeah. Definitely without Blake.
Luckily, the Clippers have themselves a little bit of a gap, but I think it closes quickly because I think they might play far under 500 with Blake out, unless they make a big move. But they don't have pieces to move. That's the thing. People are like, oh, who could they go get? One, there's no way on the market.
Mm-hmm.
You going to go trade for Stat? That's your guy on the market, and you have Dallas wanting him? Cuban's going to run that price up because Cube's fucking nuts. He wants a guy. He gets him. You saw Rondo. I mean, he gets him. He trades. It's funny that I don't like the Rondo trade for the Mavs still.
No.
It just hasn't worked. I think it disrupted a lot of good things they were doing offensively. I think Brandon Wright was a bigger piece than they thought. But they're still a playoff team in the West. Rondo's still a good player. And he could be terrifying in the playoffs. We know what playoff Rondo does. The West is generally terrifying.
I think that's the conclusion
that we're coming to.
West is hard.
The West is tough.
Don't get rid of conferences. I like being in the East.
Let's stick here. Adam Silver, let's not rearrange things. It's much more fun. Then there's the bottom of the East, which is essentially behind the Bucks at 6 is a competition to get run out of your arena for two games in the first round.
Yes.
Get a little extra coin, you know, some playoff seats.
Yeah.
Sell some playoff seats and get beat by 20. By literally anyone else. Cavs are going to finish as a 2 seed in the East.
I feel like that, yeah.
They're playing well.
Yeah.
LeBron's...
maybe Toronto stays on, but it's going to be 2-3. I think right now Toronto, Cleveland are your 2 and 3. I don't trust Chicago at all. Washington's been terrible.
Here's the thing. Chicago doesn't have enough shooting.
No.
There's just nobody on that team. Pau Gasol is playing his little heart out, and I fear he could run down.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he's had injury problems before.
Had injury problems, and just he's an old dude. You're going to play him
32
a night. You're playing him 32 a night. And in the East, when you play the top-tier teams, they're going to run you. Washington, Toronto, Atlanta, obviously, Cleveland, all four teams are running you. Jokic's had health issues all year and hasn't been good.
No.
Let's be honest right now. The Jokic no idea that he was a possible all-star was a joke. He's not been good. Here's the thing. Jokic can turn it up in the playoffs and be crazy 18 rebounds and 7 points. Mm-hmm. But who's scoring for that team? Jimmy Butler's good. He's a good player. And he's going to
draw fouls. He can get shoots. He can make some threes.
He can get hot. Derrick Rose can't shoot.
No.
He keeps thinking he can and taking some of the worst three-pointers I've ever seen. The leaning fault, like his, he might have his shot mechanics of a guy, of a high-level guy who shoots a lot. His shot mechanics might be the worst in the league.
It's not only that, I'm still concerned he could get hurt again. And it's not from really saying he's had previous injuries. It's just the, I think a lot of people point out, just the way he runs is awkward. I think someone...
He runs kind of bow-legged?
Someone said this on Twitter. He runs like someone's tied his shoes together.
That's true. He runs awkwardly, and he just plays with such reckless abandon. He's got that Russell Westbrook streak. Except Russ is out of control, but I feel like
Russ
knows how to do his thing.
Russ is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
You know, he's just
all over.
He just seems like
he can absorb all that.
The thing about Rose, I kind of expected him to come back with a little more weight on him than he did. I figured he'd just be in the gym. But, you know, Russ kind of handles it and does his thing, and he's the exception to the rule. But you see point guards that go crashing into the paint the way Rose does, because that's all he's got is crazy hops. And the thing is, he gets banged and he falls. And like
you cringe every time he falls.
The thing is, and every time he comes down, like he jumps so high, he comes down from so far. Any feet underneath him, it's so easy for him to roll an ankle or twist that knee a little bit funky. He's always landing weird. And you know, even if he's not hurt, I just don't think Rose has been great this year.
He hasn't.
He's been
Josh Smithian shooting from three.
And he exactly. hoists.
Yeah.
And the
seven
and the,
again or how many? Not 7 again. 6 again.
I posted his clutch stats the other day because after that, he hit that big three. He hit that big shot against Golden State. After Golden State game, everybody saw a lot of...
He's back.
No, I saw a lot of Derek do what Derek do, or Derek Rose, you know, he do what he do. And I was like, oh, is that what he does? Really? Look at his clutch stats. The dude doesn't make late game shots.
I saw a lot of Derek Rose's back. I think that was the game he was like...
Pronounced back, and he was 11 for 32.
8 turnovers. 11 for 33.
He had his first assist came like late in the fourth.
And only assist came late in the fourth.
And I think it was to a Kirk Heinrich three-pointer, which is... You're relying on Kirk Heinrich to hit big threes for you. Chicago... And I keep seeing a lot of folks are like, well, Chicago, I still think it's Chicago and Cleveland in the East. What? What have you seen from Chicago that says they're going to consistently put it together for three series?
At least with Cleveland, you've seen it lately. It's like they're all healthy. No. LeBron looks good. You're like, okay, yeah.
Cleveland. I've been on this train all year. You know, they got Mozgov in. That was big. They've wanted Mozgov all year.
J.R. Smith has been a little bit revitalized, I think.
J.R. is a guy that I think.
I think he said it himself. Like he's. Being in Cleveland's a lot different from being in New York.
And this is here's the most on-point thing I think Charles Barkley said all year. Not a high bar. I love Chuck, but this is not a high bar for poignant analysis. He said, JR, you put him with a bunch of idiots, he's going to be an idiot. Mm-hmm. You put him with some professionals, and he's going to kind of fall in line. Like, he should not be your leader. But it's not a knock on him. There's a lot of guys that shouldn't be your leader.
Right.
But you put him with some guys that know what they're doing, and you put him in a city where he can't get himself into trouble. Like, Sunday through Thursday, you can't get in trouble in Cleveland unless you are actively finding it, and he doesn't know enough people in Cleveland to do that. They all live at the hotel. None of them have houses, so all the guys live in the hotel, except for LeBron.
Yeah.
Love, JR, Marion, Miller, they all live in the hotel. So they're right by the arena. They can't go anywhere. There's no bars in Cleveland. He's playing well. He wasn't even supposed to really play much for him. When they brought him in, they wanted Shumpert.
Right.
The deal was the Knicks wanted to get rid of JR. They were willing to get rid of Shumpert for free. Because
they're bad. And they actually have their pick this year.
Because a 2019 second round pick is nothing. That's essentially what that is. So the deal was that, and JR's been playing well because I was talking to Herring last night. Or on Friday, and he was telling me last year, J.R. Smith was the third best spot-up shooting three-point shooter in the NBA. 47%. He can shoot the shit out of the ball. You put him in a situation where that's his job, he's going to be good. Damn good. Remember those Denver teams where they had other people that could play?
Yeah.
He was damn good. That's when he won Sixth Man of the Year the first time, I think. Mm-hmm. Or was in the conversation for it. You put him in the situation where like that, he's going to play well. The Cavs, you know, from what I've heard, they brought him in kind of for a workout, were blown away by him. He came in, played hard. He's playing hard on the court. He's having fun with the guys. He's mixed well with that locker room in the way Deion.
Yeah.
Deion and Kyrie were pretty cool for a while early on in their careers, but then he got frustrated and blah, 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 because he's Deion, and he thinks he's a starting player in this NBA. So the Cavs are the two seed for me, and then I think it goes Toronto and then Washington and Chicago and somewhere. That Washington, Chicago, I think Washington beat Chicago anyway.
Yeah, I think they beat handily.
And then the Hawks always beat Washington. Washington is not a matchup that works well against Atlanta. They just don't have the players. They play a lot of Chris Humphreys against Paul Millsap. That's not good. So, you know, if it falls the right way, I think the scary thing for the Hawks was if the Cavs sputter around and they catch them in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
That was what scared me. But the Cavs are turning it on. I think they cruise on through. Toronto's hitting some hiccups. They're having some issues. I still think they're a good team and they would be scary. But I think they're going to be that three. That Cavs-Raptors series would be fun in the second round. And the thing is Toronto, if you're the three seed and you catch the Bucks, that's not fun.
No.
That's a six-game series. Milwaukee's tough.
Their defense is
Milwaukee's
ridiculous.
Tough. If they're healthy, they are tough. Giannis is starting to put things together.
Mm-hmm.
They got hella length all over that court. They're playing good basketball. So it's gonna be interesting the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs and maybe two of the first round series. The 4-5 and the 3-6 could be interesting. Everything else, the 2-7, 1-8 is just gonna be just an atrocity. Yeah. Like it's going to be massacres every night. It's gonna be like that Magic Hawks series. In 2009.
That was a 2-3 matchup.
Yeah, that was... Oh, my God. Every game was 30 points at one point. Oh, the margin of victory in that series is just so depressing.
That was what got Mike Woodson fired from Atlanta.
Yes, it did.
That was my favorite stat people always mention. It's like, but he got better every year. And it's like, no, he didn't.
Played... The players got better.
Al Horford got better every year.
Jeff Teague learned to play basketball. Yeah. No thanks to really anybody else on that team.
You can't get blown out by 20 every night when you're the three seed in a playoff series.
No. At home, losing by 25.
Yeah. I think that broke the record for like the largest margin of
for a second round series.
Yeah.
By a lot. It was really ugly. So you look at the East playoffs, I think you can pencil in Hawks, Cavs, Raptors, Chicago, Washington, and then Milwaukee. The 7 through 10 teams in the East, you can literally grab them out of the hat and toss them out after 4 or 5 games. It really doesn't matter who makes it. Indiana could make it, get rocked. Charlotte gets beat down by whoever, especially if Kemba's out.
Yeah.
So it's just no good anywhere in the bottom of the East.
I mean, even Detroit, I mean, they're without
Jennings, they just don't have enough. They don't have anybody that can shoot. It's KCP, and he can't. He thinks he can, and he'll put him up. But nobody else on that team can shoot, you know, other than...
Who's starting at point guard now?
It's Jody Meeks. Jody Meeks is the only guy that shoot on that team.
But who's starting at point guard now for them?
I don't even know.
I know who it is, but I was confused with...
Let's look that up. Who is? Let's learn some things about basketball.
Yeah, let's do it.
I haven't watched a lot of Pistons basketball since the Jennings injury. Because it got sad. You're looking at... DJ Augustine?
DJ Augustine, yeah.
He's a player, but he's not what Brandon Jennings is doing after the Josh Smith trade.
He's a Rick Barnes player. Fucking Texas.
He's actually been decent lately, I think.
He's like
decent for being
DJ Augustine. Yeah. But yeah, let's talk some more about the West because I like them better.
Let's move to the fun conference.
Other than the Hawks and the Cavs, let's talk a little bit about the top of the West because it's a little harder to shake out.
We talked about Memphis and Golden State.
We talked about bit. I think they stay okay. As your top two teams. Portland is an interesting team. So is Houston. That's just, you know,
I'm not sure what to make of Houston at all. They've been
injuries
all year, so I'm not sure what they are.
Here's my problem with Houston.
And they have Smooth.
Yeah. So here's the thing about Houston and my whole deal about Morey Ball in general. The mid-range shot's not a great shot for most players, especially if you're not getting in the right way.
Right.
However, I think the mid-range shot is important from a spacing standpoint. Because I think if you are only shooting threes and only shooting in the paint at the rim stuff, you somewhat become easy to defend because you know where they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I
it's
think
easy
it's
easy to run a guy off the 3-point line, make you, him go like
right,
step
and
in,
then
he's not going to shoot
right.
It by
and Houston doesn't have enough really good shooters. I think if you're forcing them to go the second and third option behind the 3-point line, you're getting to a lot of. You know, if you force them off the 3-point line initially, you force Harden to make a pass because you clog the lane and you force a kick. You've got Ariza.
You have Smoove.
And you have, you know, if Terrence Jones comes back healthy, but he's not a great shooter.
You have Monta Yunus shooting threes.
You have Donuts. I just think in the playoffs,
really?
I think again, in the playoffs, and I think we saw this with Portland. Portland made them play basketball in a way that they don't want to because you're a scout for them. Houston takes advantage of teams that you don't have a lot of time to scout because they do play such an extreme version of that style. Everybody wants stuff at the rim, mm-hmm. and everybody wants three-pointers. Every team in the league wants to do that except for like six that don't get it. You know, six that are still holding on to some stupid pull-up jumpers are good. However, you look at really good teams. Golden State will take mid-range shots, but they get them in a good way. They get spot-up mid-range shots. The Hawks get spot-up mid-range shots and quick little pull-ups off of pick and roll. Those are fine, especially when you have shooters that can do it. Portland gets them because Damian Lillard can hit them fine. LaMarcus Aldridge is one of the best
that's
in the league.
That's all he does.
Al Horford.
Can't kill you with it.
Right. Al Horford, Paul Millsap,
Dirk.
Okay. You look at Memphis, Z-Bo can hit him. Marcus All will hit him.
Conley
can hit that pull-up. There is worth in that because if you're not playing from 8 feet to 23 feet, you're giving up a whole hell of a lot of basketball court that you don't even have to worry about. Because they don't want to take them. And if you make them take them, they don't have shooters that can hit them. Harden can hit them, but none of their bigs can shoot on a consistent basis from the mid-range because they don't ever have to. They shoot corner threes, and they're not in those positions. They don't run plays for spot-ups.
Mm-hmm.
You might get a scramble jumper. I think there's a problem to that. I think there's an issue with looking so much at these are the most valuable shots. They're the most valuable shots if you can get them in good rhythm. If you're forcing threes, it's not good. And if you're making them pass a lot and take late clock threes, which they did against Portland last year, and take contested shots at the rim, problems.
I've seen that with Atlanta a lot this year in terms of defensively forcing teams to take bad threes late in the clock.
Atlanta's one of the best.
I think at one point they were getting outshot in terms of three-point attempts. They might still be, I don't know. But they were doing is they were forcing teams late in the clock. They had to take contested.
Last 5 seconds.
Yeah. Contested
and
three,
and
last
somebody
5 seconds.
Flying out.
Yeah. You know, it's not necessarily your best shooter either.
Yeah. It's usually your second or third option behind there. So I think a good defense in the second round, or even the first round, Houston could run into San
Antonio. They could run into the Spurs in the first
round. San Antonio in the first round.
This is not fair.
And that's ball game because the Spurs are one of the best defense in the league, just like the Hawks, making you take a late funky shot that you don't want to take. And if you don't have the shooters that can make them, they're going to burn you. And I think that's where Houston's biggest problem. Jump shooting teams can win. We've seen it. Some of the best shooting, the shooting teams win. However, if you're not shooting and you, if you have a team that can't make a lot of shots from all over the floor, I think you have to have the ability to make that mid-range jumper, because in the playoffs you're going to have to take some of those.
Right.
They're going to make you. You're not going to get all threes. You're not going to get them all in the paint. And if you just don't ever shoot them, I just don't. That's my biggest issue with Houston. I don't think they're a team that in the playoffs can win, because they're going to get forced to take shots they don't like, and they're not used to it. In the regular season, you play them once. They play such an extreme version of that basketball, it's kind of hard. By game three of a series, you got dialed. And they can't adapt. Because it's just Harden running full steam, and Dwight occasionally catching a rebound. Yeah. I like Ariza fine, but I think Houston is of the top four teams in the West, especially if you catch a Spurs team or the Thunder. Houston's the team I think that is probably the team that loses in the first round of those top four. I just don't like them enough.
Portland's number two in defense right now. That's why I really like them in the first round.
They're good. It's amazing watching Terry Stotts' Atlanta teams, and all of a sudden see him be a really good coach. One, you look at who he had in Atlanta, and you're like,
yeah.
But two, it's like he's made strides to learn the NBA, and he has his players playing good basketball. LaMarcus Aldridge is just dumb. He's got a dead thumb on his left hand, and he's putting up 30 and 11. Just stupid numbers. I mean, he's a killer, and that, you know, Portland can get beat because you can take Dame out of a game in certain ways. Atlanta did that, and I think, you know, they're the type of team that, you know, they're another one that, and I think they have better shooters than Houston, just from a general, you know, Batum's been bad, but I still, you know, he can still make some threes. Steve Blake's a good 3-point shooter. And they had, and Wes Matthews is great.
Yeah.
Their bench has improved this year. So I think Portland's a team that can scare some people in the West. And, you know, Dame and LaMarcus are two of those guys that just, it's hard to...
I think you have to pick between the two who you want to take out. And I think you have to go for Dame because he shoots threes.
He shoots threes and he gets to the rim. And the thing about LaMarcus is where I'm fine with him shooting mid-range shots, I think, you know, you make him take enough 18-footers, just the law averages is gonna wear down. I mean, he...
Try to get a hand on him sometimes.
And really the thing that... And I remember Bud was yelling about this in some timeouts against Portland was, you don't want him taking that quick look. You want to make him at least pump and think. If he catches and shoots, it's money. Same with Horford. I mean, that's what you do with those guys. Al's better at driving than LaMarcus, but LaMarcus can put it on the floor a little bit, but I think, especially with that hurt thumb, you want to make him dribble. You want to make him kind of make a move, try to force him a little bit to his left. But you don't abandon the corner shooters. You trap Dame high, and you make LaMarcus beat you on those mid-range, and some nights he's just going to do it.
Some he almost nights, did it against Atlanta where he hit that turnaround.
He tried.
It was ridiculous.
He tried. I mean, it can beat you, but I think in a 7-game series, if you do that and you have the players that can make that. But the thing is it's hard to do that on a consistent basis. There are going to be nights where Dame just gets off. You know, and in the fourth quarter, he's just terrifying.
What do you make of the Spurs? You're kind of sitting there, we talked about this. They're kind of dead down there at 7th right now.
They're right.
They're 4th in their division. They just got Kawhi back at...
They're right where they want to be.
Yeah.
They're coming on. Nobody's talking about them. They're gonna limp in the 6 or the 5 seed. I think the 6 seed is...
Teddy's still out there putting up 16-10 a night at 38. It's probably still...
I mean, you look at them. They're about to jump the Clippers for sure into that 6 spot. If I am them, I'm trying. I would if I'm the Spurs, I'm sitting in the 6. I want to play Houston in the first round. I don't want Memphis. I don't want Golden State. I want the 5 or the 6, but preferably the 6, because then in the second round you don't have the Warriors. And you can kind of build to that. I think if you're the Spurs and you can get that 6 seed, I think the Spurs are beating whoever is in the 3 seed. I think they can beat Portland, and I definitely think they beat Houston. I think they beat Houston relatively handily. I think that's maybe a 6-game series, possibly only 5. I just really... The Spurs are going to be there, and they're going to start playing that basketball that they do. Splitter is really underrated. He's been playing really well lately. Defensively, he's really good. He's one of the best passing big men in the league. He never gets credit for that. But some of the passes he throws, especially him and Manning, work so well on the pick and roll where they pop with Splitter, and then Manning just kind of keeps his drive.
Mm-hmm.
So they run a little pick and pop, and then he pops out, and then Manning makes a little diagonal cut, and Splitter's so good at that little quick low bounce pass. That's one of my favorite things that they do. And he can do it with Manu. He does it with Tony. Duncan is a cyborg, and he just is programmed to get himself a double-double, and that's what he's going to do. And the big question for me with the Spurs is whether their bench can get back to playing the way that they played last year in the playoffs. Can Boris Diaw find himself? He's been bad this year. I think it's been kind of quiet. But Boris Diaw has not been good this year. Danny Green's not shooting it as well, but you know, in the playoffs, Danny Green kind of steps to a different level. He kind of does that every year.
Mm-hmm.
He's never really in that. When you talk about elite level 3-point shooters during the regular season, you never mention Danny Green, but you have to in the playoffs,
right?
Because that's what he does. He can make 8 in a game, and they just play a different. And the thing about the Spurs, and it's similar to Atlanta and some other teams, they're always in the middle of the league in pace,
mm-hmm.
but their pace isn't...
Their pace isn't up and down. It's up and across down. The court once they get...
It's in the half court. Yeah. The pace isn't... They're not taking shots early in the clock, but they're moving the defense the entire possession. And I think that's the place where people talk about pace. Bud always talks about pace and space. That's his first fucking thing he says, and everything you ask him, pace and space, pace and space, and it gets annoying, but it's true. And the thing about pace and space that Spurs do, Warriors do in their half-court sets, it's not getting a shot with 14 on the clock. It's getting the shot with 7 or 5.
That's wide open.
That's wide open. They could care less if they're taking... The Hawks take so many under 5-second shots, you know?
But you see a lot that, like... But keep passing.
Wide
and open. Then 5 seconds left, you see the bar is wide open in the corner.
It's because they'll run a little motion, and they really get... The thing about it is what the Hawks and the Spurs do a lot is they'll run motion and move the ball around and start moving the defense, and then they get into their pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually the secondary pick and roll that gets it going. They start with the pick and roll, kick it out, move it around, loop somebody back around, and it's the secondary pick and roll with 12 on the shot clock that gets you. Because your defense is scattered at that point. You're not set. A pick and roll when your defense is stagnant and the offense is stagnant and it's set, you can defend. When you have a guy that's chasing a Danny Green or a Kyle Korver around the back screen and people are looking at Kyle or Danny, is he going to get 3? A big floats out because somebody's standing in the mid-range. And then you get that pick and roll action, and then people start collapsing, and then a pass, and an extra pass, and then it's a 3-pointer. And you're like, well, what? There are 5 seconds on the clock. Yeah, but he was wide the fuck open. And that's what they'll start doing in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And they've started doing it now.
And it helps that they're pretty much healthy right now.
They're pretty much healthy. You're going to see Pop doing Pop things. He's going to keep them right in that nice mid-air. I think, you know, nobody's going to ever say it, that they look at positioning and matchups. But if I'm looking long-term as a Spurs guy, the 6th seed is where I want to be. I don't want 5. I don't want 4. Because... Then you go and take it. And you don't want that. Spurs can beat the Grizzlies. They might not, but they can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody beats the Warriors this year.
Not either. I said that. My ESPN 5-on-5 is about how far the Hawks can go. I was like, they can get to the finals and then probably be sacrificed to the Warriors.
Yeah.
They're
just too good.
Off the charts on both ends of the floor.
They have a chance to be the first, legitimate chance to be the first team since the 95-96 Bulls to be the best team in the league in offense and defense. Very legitimate shot. You look at their statistics and you line them up.
They're third on offense right now, and
first in defense.
Right.
Which doesn't get enough. They don't get enough.
No, they don't get enough credit for defense. They're so good defensively. Draymond Green's a monster. He is. He's going to get overpaid by someone. I see you, New York Knicks. You're going to overpay for Draymond Green if Golden State doesn't overpay him. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you're Golden State and you pay Draymond Green, you probably have a 3-year window right now where you can win a title or two if you keep this crew together.
Mm-hmm.
You keep Bogut healthy. You keep Draymond. Harrison Barnes has turned into a player under Steve Kerr. You draft properly. You fill some holes on that bench when guys leave, as they do role players. You fill those roles. Warriors have a 3 or 4 year gap where they could really contend in the West all 4 years. And you just, it's really hard if you're a team like that, that's never had that, you can't pass it up.
Right.
Just like the Hawks, I think the Hawks, if the new ownership's into it, whoever it is, you max Mills out. And you overpay for Damari. And you say, this is our opportunity. The East isn't great. We could get to 2 or 3 finals in a 5-year stretch if you keep this team intact. Because they're all young.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody on this team that's old. And it's, other than Kyle Korver, and he's not going anywhere.
And he's not human, really.
He's really not. His workout regimen... I remember when he first came in, this was back...
He's playing a career high in minutes at 34,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, this was back when I used to be able to go to practice and watch some practices. And in training camp, they always let us in towards the end during sprints. Kyle Korver won every sprint. Every single one. Jeff Teague was on that team. Josh Smith's on that team. A lot more athletic guys were on that team. Now I'm sure Bazemore wins the sprints. But... Kyle Korver runs. That's all he does.
Yeah.
And he's in better shape now than he was 4 years ago. He's learned. And he studies the game and he gets better. Kyle Korver's going to be the type of guy that can play until he's 38 years old.
He's going to be Ray Allen, essentially.
Yes.
Of course, he's not going
to... Right, but... And the thing is...
Ray Allen?
Right. And so what you look at with Kyle is if he can keep healthy... And you don't worry about the upper body. You worry about the thing like Ray Allen had with the bone spurs and the ankle. But I think, you know, eventually his minutes will taper off. But even if you're getting 25 out of Kyle, that's a terrifying 25 for the other team. And you groom some other guys to fill that role. You get a shooting guard. And the Hawks are going to have a lotto pick, possibly, with Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
What? Like, it's crazy to think.
If you're not getting a lotto pick, you're getting...
You're getting 15. You're getting 15.
Yeah.
If Brooklyn's the 8 seed, you have 15.
Yeah.
Congrats. Like,
at worst, first seed in the East, then picking 15.
And picking 15. And Brooklyn can be the 8 seed and picking 30.
And that's essentially the worst case scenario with your draft pick right now. Picking 15.
The dream. Yeah. And so, you know, you look at it and it's like, and you can get a good ball player at 15. You're not going to get a great ball player, but...
They got Dennis at 16.
You can get, Dennis. Yeah, well, no, technically, I think Dennis was 14 from the Mavs because they traded, or 15 because they
did that. I think it was 16 because we were 17 and 18 originally, and then we picked up the Mavs in front of us.
Right. Because Dennis was picked, yeah, I think it was 15 because we were 16 and 17.
We were 17 and 18 originally.
We're going to fight over this because we took Shane Larkin with the 16th pick. Things are about to happen right here.
He was 17th. We took Dennis 17th.
Did we?
Yeah. Dennis was our pick.
Oh, Dennis was our pick. Oh, yeah, no, we took... Yeah, Shane and then Boston took Lucas.
Right. Okay, yeah, there you go.
Miss you, baby. Also, people earlier in the year... I'm going to give you your curmudgeons right now. People talking about how Toronto won that trade 20 games in the season? Come talk to me. Talk to me. We got Thabo. Come talk to me. Come into my mentions. With that Lou Williams bullshit. How you liking Lou now? Are you enjoying the chucker? Are you enjoying Lou Williams shooting your team out of games? Are you enjoying the offense dying when he comes on the floor because he doesn't stop fucking dribbling the ball and taking mid-range jumpers?
Very intense right there, right now for those.
Come into my mentions, all you Toronto fans that came at me 20 games in the season. How you liking John Salmons? John Salmons got cut. Paid him $1 million to not play basketball for us because that's what John Salmons is worth.
And Bebe's played 20 minutes this year.
And, yeah, and Bebe, enjoy Bebe. I love him. He is adorable. Okay, him and Bruno are adorable. Is Bebe a basketball player in the NBA for the next 3 years? No. No. He is. You talked about Bruno was 2 years away from being 2 years away? That's what Bebe was when we drafted him. Same with Walter Tavares. Walter Tavares won't be over here for 4 freaking years, but that's fine.
That's a second round pick.
That's fine. Yeah. Bebe was a first round pick.
Yeah, but Tavares is a second round pick.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. No, I know. Yeah. But yeah, how are you enjoying that? How's Lou treating you? He's a fine basketball player. Lou's a fine basketball player. But don't give me this crap. Thabo is a better fit for the Atlanta Hawks than Lou Williams. Mm-hmm. He is a better player in Atlanta than Lou Williams is in Toronto.
You said this originally.
Said it
there wasn't any room for him. His
from
style
the jump.
Didn't fit with
from the
with
jump. He's a fine basketball player. But he is not a basketball player on a team that plays the style Atlanta does, or really the style that Toronto should be playing. You know, on a consistent. They do it with their starting unit. But now when Lou's in the game. Yeah, Lou's a closer. No, he's not. Lou is a closer for bad Sixers teams. 8-seed teams. Lou's a closer if you want to be out in the first round. He doesn't know how to accept the role. Where are you, Toronto fans? My mentions are open. They've been quiet for a month and a half.
Mentions are open 24-7.
24-7.
365.
Phone lines. Give me a call.
They can be defended at any time, like the old hardcore title in WWE.
Hardcore title, 24-7. I'm a Hardy boy. Where you at? I'm doing Hulk Hogan ears. I can't hear you. I'm sorry, Toronto fans.
That was going to be Crash Holly carrying around the giant scale.
I'm out here. I can't hear you. I'm sorry. And I see Toronto fans, and they're learning. And they're learning what Lou Williams is. And he's a fine basketball player. I watched him at South Gwinnett. I've known what Lou Williams is since he was a freshman in high school. I've seen it with my own two eyes. He destroyed my high school as a freshman. He put 45 on this shooting from half court. But that's what he is. He's a shooter. He doesn't play defense. He doesn't move the ball well. He gets some assists, yes, but they're usually, uh-oh, I'm doubled with 5 seconds left. You better shoot now. Somebody's going to make some of those shots. But he doesn't play consistently within the flow of an offense, especially like the Hawks play. Lou Williams is a fine basketball player. He would destroy most players in a one-on-one game. He is one of the best one-on-one players in the NBA. At this point, though, in the NBA, that's not winning you anything. Sorry. He doesn't play defense. He can't. He's 6'1.5". I'm taller than Lou Williams. I'm sorry. He gets bodied up. He's small. He's a small guy. It's always been the knock on him. And it's just a problem. You can't have him out there on defense.
He's 6'1", and you're playing on... at point guard and you can't move the ball. You're 6'1", and you're playing him at the 2 and he's completely outmatched every time.
Well, and the thing is, if you put him on point guard, he's not quick laterally enough to stay in front of anybody. He's not big enough to bang with a 2 or a 3. Sometimes we're playing at 3 and that was because injuries. That wasn't Lou's fault. But he just, you can isolate him. If you're moving the ball well, he can get lost. I'm sorry.
I'm actually looking this up. I want to see who Basketball Reference credited. We thought when we had those 3 point guard lineups, essentially with Lou, Jeff Teague, and Shelvin Mack last year. And you had Shelvin and Lou and sometimes Jeff defending threes. And it was ridiculous. And people
it was terrible. Why are the Hawks struggling?
Why did they only win 38 games last year? They're not good.
We had somebody who was at best 6'2 guarding threes at points. Like, I'm sorry. But yeah, no.
We had DeMarre Carroll play at center at one point.
He did. That was fun.
Cartier playing the fourth.
Oh my God, Cartier Martin. I still think our best option at center was Cartier Martin with it. He's got a thick base. Mm-hmm. Cartier Martin with Dennis on his shoulders was our best center option for some stretches last year. They wouldn't do it. I don't think it was legal. But I thought if we gave them a big jersey and you couldn't see Cartier's head, maybe they would get confused. We could have said
it was an old cartoon with two people on top. We could walking in with a giant shirt.
You know what we should have done? We should have given Lucas. We should have given Bebe a Lucas fro and said that we called up Lucas, and we should have put him and just had him on Cartier's shoulders all the time. That's what we should have done. But yeah, so
I don't remember Lucas having a giant forehead. Like, no, I'm sorry
about
that.
No, and the Bond streak. No, that's there. But yeah, I mean, so let's not judge. So let's learn from this and not proclaim trades a winner 15 games into the year. Can we learn from this, basketball fans? Maybe. I hope you can. Because it takes some time. And again,
I was a little bit wrong on that. I thought they could have gotten more, but
they could have gotten.
Well, I didn't have a problem with them sending out Lou.
No, or Bebe. And you could have gotten more, but you cut Salmons and created a spot for Thabo Sefolosha.
Who's been great.
Who has been phenomenal.
It's the Hawks right now.
The Hawks got him shooting the ball better because the Hawks get everybody shooting the ball better because because our coaching staff cares. This isn't their thing. I'm going to get on their rant. I'm ranting.
How long are we on right now?
What are we at? We're at hour 15. I'm ranting. I don't care. If you're still with me, we're fucking going. So here's what's going on. DeMar Carroll, at middle of last year, I did a feature on him and his shooting because he had improved a lot. And when I asked him what the difference was with how he was working with the Atlanta coaches and what he had worked on, he told me Quinn Snyder was the first coach in 5 years of being an NBA player with two different franchises that had ever worked with him on footwork shooting the basketball. How is this possible? How bad is player development around the league? Or how much do teams not care that they're not trying to develop a role player and teach him to shoot the basketball so he can be an actual role player that can play for you 15 to 20? Damari's playing 30 now. He's always had the defensive knack. He learned defense from Tony Allen in Memphis, but he never learned to shoot. Maybe he learned shooting from Tony Allen in Memphis, too.
Tony Allen assists Jamal Crawford. Yeah. Teach him everything.
Which is great on defense and created the junkyard dog. But now we have the African-American Kyle Korver because he came to Atlanta.
Right.
Trademark DeMar Carroll, African-American Kyle Korver. I say that because he wants me to.
I even someone photoshopped Kyle's hair on top of him. I showed him that one at Photoshop.
I died.
He heartily laughed.
I died. So here's the thing. Why can't more teams put stuff into player development? Developing your stars is important, but you have to cultivate the entire roster to be able to step up and play when you need them. Ken Bazemore learned to shoot in Atlanta as well.
He was shooting well in the Lakers.
He shot pretty decently with the Lakers, but he says they fixed, like he had a hitch.
He talks about they fixed.
He said he keeps the balls on. He keeps the ball on his fingertips now. He tucked his elbow in. He shoots vertically now. And footwork. Footwork is key to everything in every sport. Every sport starts with footwork. Basketball, baseball, golf, football. Everything starts with your feet. If your feet are wrong, everything else is just going to go wrong.
Yeah.
Your base is wrong. That's what's... Everything else gets out of whack.
It's all about that base.
Son of a bitch, you set that up the whole way. Bo set that up for 30 seconds. As soon as he said base, he was waiting for me to get there. God damn it. Long pause. For a sip of beer. Because we're ranting an hour and 20 minutes into a podcast. I'm not editing this. This is going up raw.
It's midnight. I just
don't give a shit. Whatever. So, if you're not developing players, and that's two good teams, too. I mean, he was on, one good team in Utah.
Yeah.
And Utah's going to get it now because they have Quinn Snyder. I think Quinn Snyder is going to be great for them.
Mm-hmm.
They have some players that are learning to play good basketball. But if teams around this league aren't developing players, that's a problem. Nobody comes into the league ready to play in the NBA, except for maybe the top two guys every year. Anthony Davis was ready to play, but he had to learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James was ready when he came in, but he still had to learn some things. Everyone has to learn when they come into the NBA. Nobody comes into the NBA as the best player. Nobody, especially a role player, they're coming in because they have a skill or two skills. You have to develop the other skills to be up to par on an NBA level. DeMar Carroll could never shoot.
Nope.
He came in with a career like 29% three-point field goal percentage. He comes to Atlanta. He's shooting, 40 this year?
He's shooting 40% this year.
40. And that's not on a few attempts.
Five attempts per game. He's taking four per game.
Four per game.
Yeah.
So he's putting shots up, and he's making them. I don't understand how teams around the league aren't putting more in player development. We're too far along to just think that natural talent's going to go anywhere.
When you look at the Spurs, and they were good for the past 16,
the Spurs develop people better than anybody.
And they get those guys late in the first round, or in the second round, they find a guy, and they develop them, they turn into actual players.
And people go, how...
Look at Danny Green.
Look at Kawhi Leonard. Yeah.
People go, I wanted Kawhi Leonard.
Right,
I
could, but Kawhi Leonard, let's talk about Kawhi.
Kawhi wasn't really a shooter.
He could not shoot the ball. His shot was one of the most broken things in the ever. They fixed it, and it's like, oh, they have a shot doctor. The shot doctor. Talk to Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver tells you shot doctor is bullshit. It's just, you just have to have somebody that knows basketball. The shot doctor title can be any decent coach. Quinn Snyder, shot doctor. Kenny Atkinson, shot doctor. No, it's because they care and they take the time and they focus on it. They know, they go over the film. Look where your feet are. You're all out of whack. Okay? Widen that base a little bit. Okay? Set your feet. Square them to the target. Let's start with the base. If you go read Lee Jenkins' profile on Michael Carter Williams, highly suggested it. One of the best things I've read this year. Lee Jenkins' profile on Michael Carter Williams. Mark Price did not let Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, my apologies, MKG. He did not let MKG shoot a basketball for like a week. He was only allowed to just jump and then come down. Jump and come down. Get the feet right. Once the feet are right, we can work on all the other shit that's wrong with your shot. Your elbows in, your hand placement. But nobody does that. And it doesn't take anything super special, but it just has to be a coaching staff that's going to devote the time to do it. The Warriors clearly do it. The Spurs do it. I think the Thunder do it. The Thunder have developed a lot of really good players. The Hawks are starting to do it, and this is a recent thing with the Hawks. Trust me, this is not something where I'm going to tout the organization for the last 20 years. No. This is the last two. This is since Bud came in. And it's just amazing, and it's something that my eyes were really open to it last year, because the Hawks didn't used to do it. They got role players in, and it was like they are who they are. You ask yourself, how did Kawhi become Kawhi? It's not because it was a Spurs culture or a system. It was because they have a culture of player development and spend time with guys. And that's what the difference is. And that's what the difference in high-level teams is. I think Portland does it. You see guys Portland gets, and they make guys better. If you see a team who is able to get guys and you say, well, why wasn't he good here, but he's good here? That's your answer. It's not because the team's better on the court and it just elevates somebody's game magically because they're around players that play better. It's because they make you work.
They absorb skills through osmosis is what you're
saying. Yeah. You don't... Nobody walks into a locker room, sits next to Kyle Korver, and all of a sudden can shoot. If you go work with Kyle, which is, that's a workout.
Mm-hmm.
Amo did it. You go work with him. And it doesn't work for every player. Some players just, they don't get it, or they're not able to apply it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you even look at Minnesota right now. I mean, Ricky completely changed his shot. And it started with the base. Like, I watched him go through shoot around. And I watched it with Zach Harper, who has watched more Ricky Rubio than anybody. And Zach was like, it's completely different. His feet are better. Everything about his shot has improved, and you can point, and it's if you're developing guys and you're spending time with them, and a player shouldn't have to come to a coach and be like, I want to get better. It should be a coach that says, hey, here's what you're doing. I think we can get you better at it. And if a guy rejects it, then that's what happens. But most players in this league, if a coach tells them, hey, we're going to work with your shot, they'll do it. Players are pretty happy with who they are. On a general basis, like, not everyone is like, I want to be the best. A lot of them, like, I'm in the NBA, I'm getting minutes, things are going well,
money's good,
I'm getting paid. And it's not a knock on players, it's just kind of human nature. Is if you're in a good spot, no one's really challenging you, that's what you're gonna do. You have to have a coaching staff that challenges you, and also other players that are gonna push you. And so that's our closing thought, is player development around this league still has a hell of a long way to go.
And if you listen to Robbie, if you're a team official right now, you know where to look in terms of improvement. Because Robbie has just fixed basketball for, I believe, a fourth time on the ATL Charlie Hoops podcast.
People need to listen. Like, it's not, and I'm, I look.
You're just giving the people what they want. That's,
and the thing is like, it's not, look, I'm not the person that knows how to fix these things. I know what generally a good shot looks like. I don't put it to test with myself because I don't ever play. So when I go out, I'm just chucking. I'm not worried about my footwork. But if I could be in the gym every day, yeah, maybe I'd get a little better shot. But that's the thing. It's like, if you're ever wondering why a player gets better in one place than another, yes, it's a culture, but it's the culture that's of caring from a coaching staff.
It's a culture of action. It's not just like a culture of being.
Put that on a fucking t-shirt. Bo Cherney, spitting just wisdom at you at 12:30 in the morning. You're probably not listening to this at 12:30, but that's when we're talking about it.
It's 12:23.
So I've gone on a few rants today.
It's Monday morning. We're out here just firing, so...
Bo Cherney, you have any final thoughts on anything basketball related?
The Hawks are fun. This is the most fun I've had just watching a team, and
it's incredible.
It's really enjoyable.
And you know, the thing is I think, you know, a lot of people, I've had more people in my mentions say that, oh, y'all deserve this. Thank you, I appreciate that. I've watched a lot of bad basketball. Watched a lot of stagnant basketball. Watched a lot of Mike Woodson basketball. Every fan base in this league that isn't a Spurs fan that started watching in 1998. Every basketball fan has gone through periods of that. And I hope you get it, too, because it's a whole lot of fun. And I think the league's going towards that. I think we're going to see more teams playing this kind of fun basketball. And there's a lot of fun basketball going on in this league. I think this is one of the best regular seasons I can ever remember.
Friday night was a perfect example of that.
It's fun, just
basketball
all over
around the league.
Even if your coaching staff sucks, there's some fun basketball. Shout out New Orleans. I hope you get a better coach soon. Because Monty Williams is not good. But yeah, I mean, you look around the league, there's a lot of fun every night. I hope you're watching. And, you know, if you haven't watched a lot of Hawks basketball, I don't know why you're listening to me and Bo talk. Because that's all we talk about. Yeah. But if you haven't watched a lot, they're a lot of fun. I think everybody knows that by now. Golden State's a lot of fun. But there's a ton of teams in this league that play really fun basketball. I'm really excited to see what Stan Van Gundy can do in Detroit, because I think in a few years they're going to be a good basketball team if they can ever get pieces. They just don't have much on that roster. But he's done a lot. Another player development guy. He always does really well. You wonder why role players went to Orlando, start playing well. Stan Van Gundy teaches the game.
He teaches more about than just forming walls.
Form a fucking wall. It's good stuff. But yeah, this is a lot of fun season. And it's a lot more fun coming from our perspective this year than usual. But, you know, hopefully you can find joy even if you're a Knicks fan. Watch some other teams. Broaden your horizons.
Watch some college ball. Think about what you're going to get with that pick.
Don't watch college ball.
Watch you're going to get with that pick.
I've been watching a lot of college ball recently, and it's just, we got to shorten that shot clock. That's another rant for another day, though. Mm-hmm. I've gone deep on this one. So,
final thoughts from Robbie Cowell.
Final thoughts.
Short shot clock in college needs to be shorter.
Please. They're finally making the NIT shot clock this year 30 seconds. Hopefully that becomes the law in like 2 years. Maybe they're taking steps. That would make the game much more enjoyable. Also, if players could make open shots, that's a really frustrating thing. I think that's one of the things when you watch NBA basketball and go to college basketball, the most jarring thing is just you see good movement of, like, every once in a while you'll see like a good play, good ball movement, and then somebody misses a corner three, and you're just like, oh man. you're like, that was so good, but it just didn't result in anything, and it's kind of frustrating. That's the most frustrating thing for me. Anywho. If you stuck with us through this, God bless you. You deserve some kind of prize. I don't have anything for you. I'll give you an attaboy on Twitter or something. Whatever.
I'll give you a little happy emoji on Twitter.
I got gifts for days.
Yeah.
I'll send you the dancing guy vine. I'll send you one of my vines.
Or Maracas Woody.
Or
you'll get if I'll send us, you, we'll send you something funny.
I'll send you something
enjoyable.
Funny. Yeah.
Or if it's me, probably something cute. That's what I do.
Bo sends you lions.
Yeah.
I'll send you dancing people. Yeah, that's kind of a thing. So,
same thing.
Thanks for listening. This has been the ATL Charlie Hoops podcast. For Bo Journey, I'm Robbie Howland, and we'll try to be a little better next time. Thanks for listening.